I personally, we're not at the council that enlisted this ordinance, but apparently Verizon's or whoever they were would like to give his testimony as to why they did it. We don't know what it is, but it's there. And the same thing, I would like to just bring up the fact that if I didn't like a rule or an ordinance, like say the keeping your yard maintenance, right? Maybe I don't want to mow my grass and it stays 6 feet tall. I think there's an ordinance against that. Should I go to city council and ask, oh, well, I just want a thing because I don't want to follow the rules or the ordinance? That's not going to fly. From my understanding is that, you know, the rules are here for a reason. I don't know exactly the reasoning, but they're there for that. So my only objection would be that, you know, if we all play by the rules, we play by the rules. If you don't like the rules, there's legislation in a road that you go down there to change it. That I believe that that's what needs to be or what needs to happen because all of us are governed by the same rules. And obviously the city of Portland put that there for a reason. I don't know what the reasoning is, but I appreciate their role in that. And I just want to say that I'm not for it, and there are a lot of holes in this case, and I don't believe it's a rubber stamp that says, you know, yes or no. It just, you know, it's within the box that the rules are, and Verizon wants to play out of it. If they don't like the box, they need to square it or circle it around their facilities and their wishes. And that's all I like to say.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mm-hmm. Thank you all. We're now at the point of the proceeding where the appellate gets to rebut the evidence. Mr. Grillo, we're going to welcome you back, and I'm sure we're going to have some questions. Council will have the option of inviting staff back to answer any final questions, and then we'll proceed to have a discussion about what is the will of my colleagues and how we will proceed. So, Mr. Grillo, welcome.
Thank you.
Before we start peppering you with questions, would you like to address the specific issues that you want to address?
Yes, and let me just touch on a couple things and in the interest of time, be more responsive to your questions. And then if it's council's pleasure to either continue this or take additional evidence, we can work on it through that direction. First, I just want to kind of address this issue about emissions, ERP relative to emissions versus ERP relative to the limits for power output for a facility. As you know, and as we talked about a little earlier, the FCC through the 96 Telecommunication Act preempts local governments from regulating RF emissions in a way that's different than what happens at the federal level. I don't think there's really any question about whether or not that's the state of the law with regard to that preemption issue. The ERP issue here, therefore, is really, we should really not be arguing about ERP with regard to emissions, because that's not what the standard in 33.815.225C is about. It has nothing to do with emissions. That is simply a threshold standard that the city has adopted that is based upon the power output of those facilities. Emissions under the city's code is regulated not under the conditional use standards in 815. It's regulated under the other development standards in another section of the code. So they're two completely separate things under the city's code. So conflating ERP for purposes of emissions is incorrect under the city's code, and it's incorrect and it is unlawful under federal law. Federal law is going to regulate the emission standards with regard to this facility. So when you start mixing the two, it becomes extremely complicated and is just not the right way to go. The real issue here, and I go back to it, at least as to the threshold issue, is this facility is either going to be regulated under one set of standards or the other. It's either going to be under sub C or sub D. There are no other choices. It's one or the other. And if you adopt the hearings officer's position or the opponent's position, it will be regulated under D. If you adopt our position, it will be regulated under C. That's really that whole issue in a nutshell. And that issue, I think, as a matter of law in this case turns on the legislative intent issue in terms of what the purpose of adopting that standard was. And I think there is overwhelming evidence that the purpose of the standard was to regulate wireless facilities like this under the sub-C provisions. And I think that's where you need to go with regard to that question. Once you have decided that this is a sub-C kind of a case, then we can get into the relevant approval criteria. If, on the other hand, you decide this is a sub-D case, keep in mind that when Verizon came to the city to locate this facility here, as would happen normally, you'd have a pre-application conference, and we were told that we would be under the sub-C criteria. That's what the notice was based on. That wasn't something that at that stage of the proceedings, there was this evidence of the emissions reports and things. That wasn't in the record yet. The city was clearly going to be processing this as a sub-C, as it had done for hundreds of other cases with regard to wireless. So if you decide, the reason I'm saying this is if you decide that it's a sub-D case, then I think you're in a situation where, frankly, we probably need to send out new notice and deal with it in that way, because that's not how this case was processed. That's not how the evidence came in. The evidence didn't come in as if it was a sub-D case. It wasn't treated as a sub-D case. It was treated like hundreds of other wireless cases as a sub-C case. I don't believe you want to go there. I hope you don't go there. I hope you will treat this as a sub-C case. With that said, I think that issues in terms of credibility and qualifications, I think I've tried to explain that in our materials. I will try and do more work on that if you decide to keep the record open. Again, we have both Mr. Cully and our other engineer here if you want to ask questions. The only other thing I would mention is really kind of a procedural. If you do determine to keep the written record open for a period of time, the only thing that I would ask you to consider is merely keeping the written record open in a case that is potentially as complex as this means that you may not be able to ask questions of the folks who you want to ask questions of without, in essence, taking more evidence by hearing their testimony. So you may want to consider that. I want to do what is best for you as decision makers to make a good decision in this case. I'm sure everyone here probably feels that way. So consider that if in fact you are going to merely keep the written record open and think about whether or not you want to create a situation where there may be some opportunity for actually to have some questions and answers, particularly on some of these technical issues if you decide to go there. So that's in the interest of time. I want to wrap it up and give you an opportunity to ask questions.
Mr. Leonard?
So why would you object to be regulated under sub D?
Well, I'm not sure so much as it would be an objection to be regulated under sub D other than that was certainly not, in our view, why the city's intent was, I don't think, to regulate us under sub-D. So you're essentially regulating wireless facilities under a much different standard. And I think that what will happen if you do that is you will likely run afoul of Telecommunications Act as a practical matter, because many facilities will simply probably not be able to be approved under those kinds of high output sorts of criteria that you've created in the code.
Not so much be approved, but be required to be congregated in a specific area, in a larger footprint in a specific area.
Well, that is one of the unintended consequences, as I've termed it, in the situation. But as a practical
why would you argue that we would be preempted from doing that?
Because what would happen is, as a practical matter, is that would, in essence, prevent wireless service from expanding in certain areas, because you're going to have coverage and capacity gaps in areas where now you can't locate facilities because you're having to congregate them in certain areas. Now, it may not just be up on Healy Heights and other places, but that's exactly opposite as to the dynamics of a wireless system, which is spread out. It needs to spread out and fill coverage and capacity gaps throughout the system. If you if you regulate it like you regulate higher power television and radio broadcast facilities and cluster them, I think would run afoul of provisions in the Telecom Act.
Are you arguing that the FCC preempts us from regulating the placement of towers based on reasonable sets of conditions?
No, I'm not. Framed that way, I'm not arguing that. What I'm arguing is that if it effectively precludes service, then you would be preempted from doing that.
So in reading the hearings officer's report, one cannot help but at least my interpretation sense that he feels like he's been blown off by Verizon. He asked for documentation to support your definition of ERP, didn't get it. Somebody testified in front of him that Mr. Coley was a licensed RF engineer in Oregon. Turns out he was not. I mean, I've read in 10 years a lot of these reports. I have never got the flavor I've gotten from this one that is distinct, that he's irritated. So help me understand why you took the approach that you did, given some of the reputation the cell phone industry has, notwithstanding, I would think in a quasi-judicial kind of setting before a hearings officer, you would make sure you straighten your tie, and if they ask you a question, answer it. If they ask you if you're an engineer, you either are or you aren't. What happened?
Well, let me try and answer that as best as I can with the caveat that I wasn't there.
I was going to ask you that, but I didn't want to put you on the spot.
I
appreciate
like
you better for that.
You're throwing your partner under the bus. Is that how you get ahead at Davis Wright Tremaine?
None of my partners or associates were there. So this was a case where there wasn't Verizon did not have a land use counsel or a lawyer present at the hearing. And in all fairness, at least the best way I would, at the risk of characterizing anything, the way I would characterize it is that this was a relatively routine case. And I think going into the hearing, the notion of having the kind of debate that we're having here about ERP, it hasn't happened in hundreds of cases, and I don't think that was the anticipation going in. And the arguments that were made, I think, made this into the case that it is. And so just from that standpoint, in terms of the confusion about ERP, I think that's what was happening on one level. The other level is, again, most of the expert testimony here was really focused on the emissions side of the issue. That's mostly what the report was built around. And when it shifted into the threshold question of ERP, that's a different animal, if you will. And that there was some difficulty, I think, in refocusing on that part of the issue, because that's not usually what people are talking about in these proceedings. With that said, I think that there was confusion about the different numbers of ERP for different purposes in the report. I've tried to explain that in my materials, and I can go into that more if you want me to here. But I think the issue of credibility is really, in this case, a bit of a red herring. I do think that it was a mistake, and I've tried to make it clear that that's not accurate, that Mr. Culley is a licensed RF engineer. His title within Verizon is RF engineer. He did not represent, he did not say he was a licensed engineer in Oregon. Laura Hopfer said that. Mr. Culley was not at the hearing, neither was Mr. Pinion. So the engineer, Mr. Pinion, and the person who has the title of RF engineer at Verizon, neither of them were at the hearing. So I think that added to the situation. So at this point, we're what I tried to do, frankly, was with bringing now another Oregon licensed engineer that also has the RF qualifications with us from Hatfield and Dawson. I wanted to essentially try and move past that issue.
Mr. Grillo, in fairness, as I understand, your argument is that if we agree with you that the federal standard is established by virtue of licensing, we would not necessarily have to reach the question of the credentials.
That's exactly right.
That's your argument.
I have not disagreed with your analysis at all, and Commissioner Fish, you may be misunderstanding what I'm arguing. I'm not arguing at all, the health effects of the of the transmission tower. I understand that that's an issue that has been preempted from local governments from deciding, but it is as to whether or not we decide under Section C or D. That's the question for me. So I'm not confused at all about what my role is here. I've been through dozens of these hearings of cell phone towers since I've been on council, but I do think they raise a legitimate issue, and that Verizon went unprepared to the hearing. I'm sympathetic with it. It was probably, and it sounds like the staff as well was unprepared for some of the questions that were raised. But still, we're left with looking at a record that was represented to be one thing and later found to be wanting. And at minimum, with some questions, legitimate questions raised as to not whether or not we get to say whether you get to have a cell phone tower or not, but as to whether it gets regulated under Section C or Section D of our zoning code. And I don't think that you get to the question of whether or not the FCC considers it a cell phone facility or not, and then case closed, you can put it wherever you want. We have a lot of history of knowing that we get to regulate where these are more appropriately located. So I think we, the staff's hard work notwithstanding, I think some very legitimate issues have been raised by the neighborhood, some of which I agree with, some others I don't agree with, but some legitimate issues that should cause the council to reconsider the criteria we've been applying to the placement of these facilities based on the questions that the hearings officer raised, first posed by the Neighborhood Association with respect to ERP and whether you count channels or not, I think is a legitimate question. He asked for you to clarify that to him. I hear you say you weren't prepared to do that, but still we're left with a record that issue wasn't clarified for. But for the neighbors coming forward with some documentation from the FCC that does appear to give some guidance as to how you calculate ERPs, and that seems to indicate you take the sum total of all the channels and there's your EFP. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I'm sitting here trying to grapple with.
Well, I guess the
ERP, I'm sorry.
Just a comment with regard to your comment is that I do think that while the city's code and the FCC's code is far from crystal clear about how you calculate ERP, it is still a calculation. It's not simply a function of a definition. There is a calculation that's involved. And a consulting firm like Hatfield and Dawson that's been doing this professionally for many years, not just with local governments all over the West, but also certainly with the FCC, they are in the best position to know how the FCC calculates ERP for purposes of federal law, and their testimony has been that it is done by channel. And we believe that that's consistent with federal law, and because of the ambiguity in the city's code and its need to be consistent with federal law in that regard, and because that would make it consistent with what your legislative intent was with regard to regulating wireless facilities under subsection C. Again, I go back to that issue because to me that's the linchpin issue. Is that if you really intended to regulate both wireless and broadcast facilities under subsection D, then you wouldn't have needed subsection C. It's really superfluous. It's not going to regulate anything.
If you had towers that emitted less than 1,000 ERP.
I understand, but for as I think as staff has testified and as I've testified, really virtually all of the facilities, the wireless facilities that would come in, would be regulated under subsection D because of the amount of power that would come out if you were summing all of the channels on a particular antenna. It's partly just the way that technology has developed over time. So as a practical matter, you've got a situation that just doesn't work based upon how you set up the regulations. Now, I don't want to get into the policy debate of was that the right mechanism to use to try and characterize wireless facilities. We are where we are. And so I don't want to get you into that kind of debate. But that's what we have, and that's why under the PGE v. Boley analysis, why it was so important for the court in Gaines to say that you have to use legislative intent at that first level. You cannot lose track of legislative intent. That's the cardinal rule. And so I urge you to start there. That's the most important issue because you have an ambiguity, and that's the best way to resolve it. The worst thing you can do is lost in the weeds of looking at these definitions that are confusing and then parsing it based on that, which is what the hearings officer did. And I understand that view. But Gaines really changes that kind of analysis and reminds us all to not lose track of the legislative intent and to have that be the cardinal rule for interpreting these kinds of things. So that's where I urge you to go.
Mr. Grillo, I'll tell you this. Listening to this discussion and realizing that under the worst-case scenario, someone could argue we've applied the wrong criteria, and had we applied the correct criteria under our own code, we'd be preempted under federal law. That it does not cause for comfort. I can't speak for my colleagues, and we're going to have a discussion shortly, but based on everything I've heard, I can't decide this case today. And I don't say that because you have not addressed adequately in your submissions or the other side hasn't made a compelling case. I actually can't remember a hearing like this where it has been so thoughtful on both sides, and frankly, enough important issues have been raised which I believe require additional thought. And just to preview, I think this question of whether this is a sub C or a sub D case is really at the heart of this, and I'm going to be looking for what federal and local and city law helps inform that decision. I'm going to be looking at what's the relevant approval criteria, and in particular looking at what is the meaning of facilities, and under both under federal law how you calculate ERP. I mean that I would be surprised after all the history and litigation around cell phone towers that we're going to find that how you calculate ERP is as mysterious as I feel it is now. But I've been reading the materials, and I frankly see different rules of how you do it, and I can't reconcile them. So, I can't make a decision today without additional thought. But those, for me, those issues are going to be primary. Is it a sub C or D case, and why, and what authority under city code or federal law guides that decision? What's the relevant approval criteria? Because there's an honest disagreement about that. You know, the old joke about I went to the fights and a hockey game broke out. I mean, I think perhaps the most sympathetic way to describe Verizon's predicament is maybe they thought the hearing was going to be governed by one set of rules and it shifted, and whether they should have known or not that it would shift, but it does seem that may be at the heart of what Commissioner Leonard has identified as some confusion and the tension in the hearing officer's decision. The meaning of facilities, both under our code and under federal code, but I think the federal law ultimately trumps, and how you calculate ERP. And whether we're concerned about emissions or not, it just seems to me there needs to be some clarity in federal law under federal law or the Code of Federal Regulations or a case law as to how you calculate it. And it seems to me this issue of whether it's aggregated or not is not such a subtle or, you know, left field issue, then I'm guessing one side or each of the parties here can give us some further clarification on that. And again, okay. I say that even though as I've had a chance to listen very carefully and review the materials, I think both sides have done an excellent job of presenting their case for this hearing. And I, since the neighborhoods usually are outgunned in these kinds of proceedings, I have to say I'm especially admiring of their presentation because I'm left with some really fundamental questions I can't answer. And what concerns me is even after we answer it, we may actually have to confront some other pretty fundamental issues about whether we've been doing it the right way and what the consequence is under federal law. But
can I ask?
I think this would be helpful to me, and I'll be advocating for a continuance, keeping the record open, continuing this proceeding, and giving people a chance to put whatever additional argument they want on these points. In addition, since you've described the legislative intent as new evidence, and I'm not sure whether it qualifies as new evidence or not, but I think legislative intent is now in the record, I'm going to advocate for giving the other side a chance to put their view of legislative intent in, so that if there's any disagreement on that.
I just raise a couple procedural questions. What is the FCC shot clock?
The FCC shot clock is conceptually similar to the 120-day rule in the city. It's a time frame under which a final decision needs to be made, or there are, in this case, federal consequences as opposed to state consequences under the 120-day rule. So it's a deadline under which you have to make a decision. In this case, because of the way the extensions have been granted thus far, they're working now. They expire at the same time. So that's helpful, I suppose, in this case, to the extent we're going to.
So February 4th, if we didn't make a decision by February 4th, would the FCC make that decision for us if Verizon requested? Or?
No, there are remedies in federal court with regard to the 150, the FCC shot clock, just as there are remedies in state court under the 120-day rule in the state.
It's similar, though, to our state rules that the applicant can request the FCC to extend the deadline.
The applicant can extend the deadline.
And you're willing to do that?
We're willing to, yes, work with the city to do that, to accommodate additional evidence.
That would
yes.
be very helpful. Thank you.
So my second procedural question is, I don't know if we've ever done this before, is it possible for the city council to remand to the hearings officer to do another hearing?
So your code does not provide for that. It's my understanding that has happened in the past, but there's certainly procedural risk with doing something that's not contemplated by a code that is very specific about procedures.
Procedural risk meaning, interpret
meaning
that
somebody
for me.
Could challenge that procedure and say that was incorrect to have a hearings officer make a decision.
The reason, Commissioner Saltzman, that I would not support a remand at this point is that I'm not convinced, based on what I've heard, that this can't be decided as a matter of law. And the principal reason to go back to the hearing officer, I think, would be to make an additional factual findings, which would be useful to us in our decision. And just based on what I've heard, I'm optimistic that this can be decided on the law without additional fact-finding. I may be wrong, but that would be my hope.
So I would say that, Commissioner Fish, you've identified a number of issues that need further analyses. I think we should have a clearinghouse where those are done.
Yep.
So that those answers are provided to each of us. But I need to point out one that I think needs special attention and I think should be done by the city attorney's office, and that's this definition of ERP for the purposes of deciding under Section 33 of the Zoning Code whether one of these facilities falls under subsection C or D. So I know we have...
I can tell you right now in discussions...
Can you move closer to the mic?
Sure. It's a new mic today, so I'm sorry. I don't know how close to be without yelling at you. The city attorney's office agrees with the hearings officer that code definition is ambiguous, and so it's going to be a matter of interpretation, and that's a matter for at least the hearings officer initially and then counsel subsequently.
But if I'm to rely on what I'm looking at, what's been submitted to me, then and I'm asked to, you know, legislative intent is one way to construe statute or ordinance, as another is the clear language of the statute or the ordinance. And my preference is always to have the language be clear and unambiguous, so you don't have to go look through minutes and debates. And it would appear on its face that the clear definition, at least from what I've looked at so far, if you look at least at the what the neighborhood has provided, FCC's OET Bulletin 65, total power of all channels being used is over 1,000 watts effective radiated power. So you add up all the channels. You probably have a rebuttal to that. What I guess what I'm looking for is how does, in fact, the FCC determine ERP? I mean, what is it? What is the calculation that they use to determine what that figure is? Because we want to use, obviously, a standard as close to the federal government as possible.
It seems like a good question. The question is who should be answering that. And I'm not entirely certain whether, to put this gently, whether a land use attorney is the right one to answer that, or whether that's a technical question, or whether it's a staff question. I honestly don't. And if you're looking to us, we can do research and we can provide information, but.
I mean, we have people that advise, you know, our.
And I'm sure staff can work with.
I mean, David Olson. I mean,
yeah, I think Ben Meltzer would be very helpful.
But in the staff submission to us, there is a, you know, the staff has a view of this. That I think the challenge is, you can make a number of arguments based on what statute or regulation you look to, and we have very thoughtful people making arguments that come out on either side of it. And my guess is that at some point that just may be for us in a quasi-judicial proceeding to make that call.
Or to make a call on this particular case and then clarify the policy, because that's the challenge, is that the zoning code is ambiguous in this case.
That's the case that's before us.
Yeah, we need to make a decision on the case that's before us. It seems pretty clear to me that there will be ongoing policy choices to be made that are part of an ongoing legislative procedure rather than this quasi-judicial. And what I'd like to see, I agree, Commissioner Fish, with your call for a continuance of the hearing so that, as Mr. Grillo suggested, everybody can come back and give more oral testimony. I will say it's been very helpful to listen to the oral arguments. I got a very different sense and understanding from hearing your verbal testimony compared with reading through the record. Both have been very helpful. I would like the opportunity to read through everything that's been submitted today and in the past week so that I would actually like a written response from staff rather than bringing you back today so that you can give us your comments about what you've heard and what's in the record. And then
we're going to start discussing next steps. Do you have is there anything else you would like to put in the record at this point, or do you feel like you've had your say?
I think that there's nothing further that I asked to be put in the record. I understand you're going to determine whether or not to reopen the record, and then we can perhaps deal with that and offer comments at that point logistically.
So if you could stick around, go back to your seat, because we're going to, I presume, try to work out an agreement on scheduling. So, and Ms. Kate, if you could come forward. My colleagues may have some final questions. Commissioner Salzman?
Oh, I just wanted to know I know she wanted to say something, so.
Thank you.
Yeah.
If I could provide you orally with staff some clarifications with the issues you're wrestling with today, I think it would be helpful, and I would be delighted to put this in writing, too, during an open record period.
Sylvia, let me just, I'm going to cut you off just for a second to find out how my colleagues feel about this. It's a long day. We've had counsel since early this morning.
Sure.
I have no doubt you can make a very eloquent oral presentation on those points, but I think the council is also signaling that they want to consider this. And my preference would be to get it in writing so we have the chance to digest it. My colleagues may have a different view.
Well, yes, and I would like that as well. But like, if I don't know if the Office of Cable could ask Ben Walters, or you could ask Ben Walters, but if you and Ben could get together and talk. And what I'm looking for more is not maybe what we did or did not decide at one time in Title 33 of the Zoning Code, but, you know, what is it that we need to do to clarify that today to make so that we're using a standard that the feds use as well and how they calculate ERP?
Well, the office, you mean the Office for Community Technology?
I was just trying to remember the name, but I can't keep that. They are here today.
So yesterday.
David Olson's office.
No, they well,
I'm old enough to remember when it was called the office.
Of they are here, and yeah. So they could easily. Yeah.
So you,
they've been
you,
here the whole time.
You
so.
Can get together with your colleagues and. Mm-hmm. It's not that we want to cut you off right now, but I think your presentation will be more effective if it's in writing and we have a chance to reflect on it. So thank you. And I want to propose to my colleagues that we continue the hearing, frame the issues that we would invite further presentations on, the issues of concern to each of you, get an agreement from the appellant to an extension of both shot clock, both time limits, so there's no question there, and see if we can get a tentative date from Carla for when this would come back to council. Does that cover the key issues?
Yeah,
Commissioner Leonard, would you like to start with just reframing your issue?
Just as I said, I mean, I don't want to so much get into a back and forth about what was intended or what wasn't intended. My interest is, and I've sat through a number of these hearings, and this issue just has not come up before. My intent would be to find out what the feds use as a definition for
ERP,
and then have us discuss that and go from there.
Commissioner Fritz.
I heard some new issues raised today that, as I said, I haven't heard before, particularly on the public exposure. So I need some more information on that, and then looking into the facts of this case, because we have to decide based on what the goalposts are in this case on the date that the application was submitted. So that, and then I do think that when we come back together, we'll want to start framing a legislative process to look at what is our city policy, what are our preferences. 10 years ago, we decided we were going to put to favor putting things in the right of way unless they could go on sites like this. I mean, to favor them in the right of way rather than sites like this. We're now finding that's causing some concern. So I think there's a case for a citywide discussion of our facilities and how we provide them. This isn't the case. This isn't the venue for that discussion. This one has to be decided based on the merits of this case. But thank you very much to both sides for making those distinctions very clear.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Well, I don't think I have issues that are different than what Commissioner Fritz and Commissioner Leonard raised. It was a good presentation by the neighborhood and by Verizon.
Mr. Hill, the four points that I raised with council, were you able to get those?
I think that I heard them as sub-C versus sub-D.
Just real quick, just to make sure we...
Yes, I think that I heard the ones you expressed as sub-C versus sub-D and why it's going to be one or the other under the city code. What are the relevant approval criteria, depending on which of those we end up with? Federal law and how they calculate ERP. What is a facility under the city code and also under federal law?
And the Commissioner Leonard's point about how do you calculate ERP under federal law. And may I just say that, again, each side has put in substantial materials here. If you feel that any of these questions have already been addressed adequately, you can refer us to what you've already done. We don't want you to kill more trees if you think you've adequately done it. We're not looking for new evidence, but to the extent you believe new evidence was introduced at this proceeding, you do have the opportunity to rebut it.
Okay.
And I think the only thing left, Carla, is the time, how long people will have to put their written submissions in and when we come back to
Mr.
Council.
Mr. President?
Yes, Mayor.
Just to put in a few items before you schedule the continuance. If staff could provide for me the aspect of this issue that have regarding the concentration of equipment and the additional supply or service equipment required, and give me just a sense of how the application and the industry in putting in the application by the industry of placing the cell phone towers how that has changed since we last did a big update or put the ordinance that we do have on the book. And listening to the testimony today, and I appreciate the opportunity to listen in. I heard new issues as Commissioner Fritz talked about, and as Commissioner Leonard is asking for more clarification. The concentration of more of this equipment, pieces of this equipment, I'm still not clear on. And I think it would be useful as we look as well to what are the best local regulations for the future. So thanks.
Thank you, Mayor.
Commissioner Fish, I need to jump in because I need to make sure procedurally we're not erring here. When we have a closed record hearing, there were people who submitted additional evidence and people who have additional issues. One of the ways to correct that, if council is going to, you can reject any of those. You can say, we reject all those. Or you can say, we accept them, but we're going to give an opportunity for anybody in an additional open record period to respond to that new evidence. I want to make sure that's very clear. I also want to be clear because some of the issues that all of you have raised seem to me like they're inviting additional new evidence. I think you need to be clear with the parties whether you're intending for them to only argue these things. For example, Commissioner Leonard's request for how does the FCC do this might require a party in order to explain it well to bring in additional evidence. But if you're intending for them to argue it only based on what you have right now, they need to be clear on that. So I guess two questions. One, what do you want to do with the new evidence that was presented today? And two, how do you want the parties to be able to respond in this period before they come back to you?
So my question is more a question of staff. And it is, what is the standard? It's the same question the hearings officer was asking and said in his own decision. I couldn't get an answer to. Okay. And I'm asking that same question, but I don't want to hear the answer from either the two parties in this case. I want the staff via Ben Walters or somebody who has the technical expertise to say, here is how the FCC defines.
Okay. And it may be possible that in responding to that, Ben or Sylvia would need to rely on additional evidence. I don't know. I mean, as I've made clear, that's not my area of expertise. Okay. I don't know. So I just need to make
Let's
sure
cross that bridge on that point. I mean, I think our intention is to solicit legal arguments mostly.
No, I would disagree. I want to review the new evidence that was submitted by both parties today.
Oh, hear me out for a second. She raised two points. I'm addressing the second point. The first point, our practice has been if evidence is presented at this hearing, as it has been, we open the record and we allow people to respond to it. And I think that's what you were prompting that you think is the better approach.
If your choice is to include that evidence, and I had heard a couple of you say that you wanted to have that evidence in. So
I think there's consensus that we would do that. On the question of whether the second question you raised has to do with the legal issues that we've asked people to address in their briefs. And my preference, at least, is that people argue what the law is, cite to the statutes, the code, and the case law, and resist the temptation of bringing in new evidence on that part of their analysis. But on the question of any new evidence which has come before us today, it would be fair game for people to put in evidence to rebut it.
I think we saw last time with the Recology hearing that it was really difficult to assess what was new evidence and what was arguments about new evidence. And in this particular case, it seems like both parties have brought new challenges forward and that it's probably in the best interest of both parties to allow new evidence and new arguments so that we can get to this is a very complicated case, so I think if we get to the extent that we can do away with arguments about what's new evidence and what's arguments about new evidence and let people comment on this case and anything that they feel is pertinent to it, that would be helpful to me.
Well, okay, but I mean, that potentially means we could have depositions, we could have affidavits submitted, we could have experts. I mean, I think I can decide this case on the questions we've presented without opening the record again. And I respectfully think that may produce an outcome we don't want. I mean, it's really the council's decision here, but I don't think there was any substantial new evidence put in here, but if someone thinks so, we want to give them a chance to rebut it. But if we open the door to new evidence in support of arguments, I think we're going to turn this into a trial, and we're going to get affidavits or other kinds of things. I don't know that we need that, but it is a council decision.
I mean, frankly, for me, it's the definition of the federal standard on that I've asked for. I mean, I don't actually, frankly, need any evidence from either of the two parties. I'd like staff to provide. I mean, and if we had somebody here today that could do that, I'm prepared to make a decision today.
And I'd like more comments from citizens who are not skilled in affidavits and depositions and goodness knows what else and figuring out what's new evidence versus new arguments. I'd just like us to be able to continue. Since we're continuing the hearing, we're going to be continuing the discussion, and I'd rather us not get into what's defined as what.
That by definition is new evidence, and you can't say what new evidence then will take. The other side wants to do what Commissioner Fish alluded to, then we're deluged. I mean, I think we know what the issues are here.
And I also, in fairness to the neighborhood that's done a superb job today with their presentation, not a single person has suggested that there's new evidence that they want to put in. I understand the general point, but Mr. Hill may correct me, but I don't believe there's new evidence they feel they need to put in at this point. Mr. Hill, would you like to come forward and either agree or disagree with that?
I can't think of any new evidence at this point, but I also have not fully reviewed the new evidence that was submitted by the appellant.
So you would have the right to rebut any of the new evidence that was put in by the appellant.
But sure.
And other than that, do you believe there's any other evidence you would need to put in to effectively argue your case?
Not that I can think of, no. I've assumed that this is an on-the-record appeal and that we're not really going to go expanding the amounts of facts that we're basing the decision upon. I think that it is a de novo review. You can make your own decision and substitute for the hearings officer's decision. But as far as the facts that it's based on versus the parties and other interested parties' characterization of the facts, it's kind of a blurry line.
But so you're confident that all of your new evidence, that's all the new evidence that you'll want to put in?
Yes. Yeah, those are already in the record, mostly in Exhibits H26 and 28. New argument? Yes, I did raise one of those in the briefing and here today.
You don't think there might be anything else to pull out of the FCC rules that you might want to add?
Oh, but that's law. That's legal argument. I mean, if it's in a rule, if it's in a statute, if it's in a case law, that's the law of the case, and you'd be free to argue that because that's
yes.
The law.
I think that you can refer to the law as an external source of info that is not a fact, right? Just in terms of adjudication, I think that you can look to the law to figure out what the rules of decision for the case are. You then group your facts, put them under the various legal hooks, right? Are we under sub C or sub D, for example? And that is not new facts, at least as I understand it.
As long as you're comfortable, thank you.
All right.
This is
thank
the
you.
Point in the hearing where our esteemed counsel looks at us with a little cross-eyed and says,
no,
we've
I'm
made
there.
A big mess of this. Are we okay?
I'm very clear, and so I'd like to restate it for the record. I gave you two questions, and you answered them, so that's great. The first was whether council intended to accept the new evidence that was submitted and the new issue that was submitted. Council does intend to accept those into the record, reopen the record solely for the purpose of allowing new evidence that is responsive to that evidence that was submitted over the last few days, or I guess since the hearings officer's decision was made. The second question is whether on the issues that council wanted to hear about, whether they intend to have new evidence in response, and the answer I'm hearing, there's been some discussion, but I'm hearing the general consensus is no, that we're asking for argument on those issues. So the question then would be, we figure out a continuance date, and then council needs to figure out the date by which they want to receive written documentation so they would have time to prepare. Two options. One would be you would have a period of time, and you just get everybody's facts. You have enough time before your hearing to talk about it at the hearing. You also could alternatively have, 7, 14-day period for first argument and then let people respond to it. I don't know how complicated you want to get, so you decide. That's up to
I'm
you.
Gonna I'm going to make a bold, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say let's keep it as simple as possible. So we have an agreement by the appellant to extend the clock, but we want to do this in a reasonable time frame. To Mr. Hill, how much time do you think is reasonable to put in a response that addresses the issues we've raised?
Is that the appellants and the opposition having a conference?
Is that an ex parte communication?
I don't think so. I think it's a party communication.
When did you start practicing law? Wait a second. What's that Esquire after your name?
Jailhouse lawyer, I think.
The next 14 days and then 7 days till the hearing.
I've never seen this happen before. This is awesome.
Sure.
Yeah, we'll
break them up.
Yeah.
What's your pleasure, sir?
I was just looking for city attorney.
She's right there.
We're all ears. The discussion we had was potentially having a 14-day initial 14-day period for rebuttal evidence and or argument. Then an additional 14-day period for rebuttal argument for anyone, no rebuttal evidence at that point, and then an additional 7-day period for the applicant, appellant in this case, to submit final written argument. Because we've reopened it to accept new evidence, then we need that 197.763 additional 7-day period at the end. That would then end the document phase.
That's 35 days.
Okay.
That's two weeks, and seven, right? So that's 35 days. And then we would need some time to be able to review all this. Could we have counsel? How much time would you like to have a chance before we come back to a hearing?
20 minutes.
20 minutes on the one end, Commissioner Fritz?
I was going a little longer. I was thinking more like 2 weeks.
How about 2 weeks?
So plus 14.
Plus 14. Mayor Adams, is that acceptable?
Yes, that would be great.
So what I'm hearing is 14, 14, 7, and then 2 weeks. And that would take us to
2 weeks after the 7 days. Okay, so we might need be another week out, Carla.
Okay. So we are looking then at February 29th at 2 p.m.
What day is that?
It's a Wednesday.
So, Carla, can we just on the record go, let's do the 14, when the end of that is, the end of the other 14, the end of the 7, and the end of the 2 weeks. So we're just setting it out for everybody. So 14 days from today.
Okay, 25th.
January 25th is the end of the first, at 5 p.m., the end of the first submittal period.
Okay. And 14
and
from that?
Is the February 8th.
Okay. And then 7 from that?
Is February 15th.
And then 20 minutes from that?
Yeah.
No, excuse me, 2 weeks from that?
Like 20 on the 12th.
And 2 weeks from the 15th is February 29th.
And Carla, what's the... And the
That's
and
not the, a trip. The there is a February 29th.
And there is.
Do you think that because sometimes our Wednesdays are jammed, do you think there's... Do we have something on Thursday afternoon?
There isn't, but it's... I'm not sure, Lindley, which would you prefer to...
It's fine. That would be...
A Wednesday's okay.
Because these Wednesdays are long days. Council, are you okay with a Thursday at 2?
Is that all right with you?
And what's the date?
It's March 1st.
March 1st,
yeah.
Let's try that.
March 1st at 2 p.m.
Okay.
Thank you to both sides for agreeing to that. I really appreciate it.
It's been an unusual and actually very stimulating proceeding. Thanks to both sides. Thanks to everyone who's stuck around all afternoon. And
Commissioner
We have one more matter that Lindley wants to prompt me on.
We need to specify the date of extension of the 150-day shot clock and 120-day. I would suggest, given that whichever way it goes, there will be a need to adopt findings after if you can reach a tentative decision on March 1st. So I think we would ask for staff. Where did staff? What would you like it to be?
Well, why don't you take 3 weeks?
Let's say a month.
Why don't you take a full month to get it right?
Let's say March 30th at least.
Mr. Grillo?
Okay, March 30th, and the applicant appears to have nodded and said yes.
So March 30th, let's see. Is that a day on which council can meet to adopt findings? I mean,
no, that's a Friday.
So we'd have to. Well, right, but what we're trying to do, as I understand it, with this last piece, is to move the shot clock and all
the 29th.
Well, it seems to me we want to move this to a time period where not only can you actually sign a decision, but mail it and get it out, because that's the final aspect of your decision.
So probably the following week then.
Why don't we make it the following Wednesday? And okay. We'll just be, that's a pro forma for us as adopting findings.
So right. So that would be April.
April 4th.
Okay. 2014.
Yeah.
That's a long time. I'm sorry.
As long as you don't have to calculate ERP to get here.
Lindley, thank you for your.
So we are continuing to a time and date certain, February 29th, 2 p.m., correct?
Correct. Okay. Thank you all. Mayor Adams, thanks for joining us. We are adjourned.